Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of the Co-Opticast. This is episode 115, title to be determined. Joining us as usual are the excellent hosts of Nick Paleo.
Oh, hi.
Silent. Yes, hi. Silent Nick on the podcast that works. Locke Vincent.
What up?
And Mike Katsafrakis.
Snooch to the nooch.
Exactly. Okay. And I am Jason Love, and as usual, we'll be diving straight into what you've been playing this week, and we'll start off with Mike, who just wrapped up something that he's been playing.
I've been playing a few games, and I'll save the best for last. I've been playing more GTA 5 because there's a lot to do in that game, and it's pretty fun, and I still wouldn't recommend anyone play GTA online. For a while.
Really? Even after the patch that they just put out?
I haven't checked out the newest patch, but they have to substantially change the content.
Yeah, there's not really much stuff to do other than just, like, fuck around.
The primary way to play GTA Online is to start a mission and then immediately quit out and restart it, so it warps you to the start point of that actual mission, rather than drive 20 minutes to it. Mm. It gets... There's some weird, weird stuff going on with GTA Online right now, and I gave it a 3 in my review. I think they have a fantastic framework for something awesome, but until they get more content patched in, and the heists would be really nice to have.
I'm really looking forward to doing those.
I'm just not feeling it. I don't like the... Like, GTA's base mechanics are good for a single player exploring the world and causing havoc, but it's just like the way the view distance is set, you know, it's real hard to see other people that are not immediately in front of you. So, you know, PvP turns into basically who can get the drop on who, and if someone gets the drop on you, you're basically done.
Because of the snap aiming, right?
Well, there's a snap aiming, but it's just like the way the camera's set up. I have a 40-inch TV, so not a small one. And if I'm standing there and someone is across, you know, on the other sidewalk, it's really hard to tell.
So what you got to do? You got to get a 60-inch TV. There. No, you just get a bigger TV.
Yeah,
that'll. That's it. Then you'll compete at
I know, but it actually, it's level. Compounded with one of the reasons I didn't like the driving at first, because the way the camera sits really low when you're driving, you actually don't get as much of a view distance as you do if you pull the camera up slightly. So, it's just... For me, it's just preference. I prefer to be able to actually see what's going on, and some people don't care, so... also, I'm going to play more Wind Waker HD, which is... It's just great. That game is awesome. And it's even better now that I have the upgraded Swift sail.
Making them.
So that means the wind is when you're sailing, that means you move twice as fast and the wind is always at your back. So you don't have to, you know, pause the game and conduct the wind so it's pointing in the direction you want to go to.
Link says, "I don't always sail. But when I do, the wind is always at my back."
Yeah, pretty much. I was waiting for that.
How are you, like, Wind Waker HD, is Wind Waker, like, why are you playing this? I'm just curious. No, I'm not trying to be a dick, I just really...
Wind Waker is my second favorite Zelda game.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's primarily because my daughter likes watching me play Zelda games.
Nice.
And I wanted to play Wind Waker again, and I wanted to have a reason to have a Wii U hooked up to my TV.
Those are all valid reasons. I appreciate that.
Thank you. But it's great. They really did a lot to, you know, beef up the game, and it holds up. Like, it holds up a lot better than a lot of the other Zeldas do, I find. Mm-hmm. It's like, it feels more modern than Skyward Sword, and Skyward Sword came out a year and a half ago.
Which is crazy.
So... Yeah, but I haven't had a lot of gaming time, but when I choose to game, I play Hearthstone. And Hearthstone, for those of you who don't know, is Blizzard's newest game. It is it's a collectible card game. and it's based on World of Warcraft. Hush
falls over the crowd.
It's really, really fun. It's really simple and intuitive, as, you know, basically every Blizzard game ever made is. But, you know, once you get going, there's quite a complex layer and a meta game that you need to learn, primarily by playing other players. And they do a lot of smart things to avoid the problems you see in something like, you know, your Dotas, your League of Legends and such. It's not the same type of game, but, you know, in a versus game, when you first learn this one, like, once you kind of, you know, rank up a bit, you're actually playing other players who got out of the training, you're going to run into instances where someone just flat out smothers you with either a well-constructed deck, or they haven't played a lot of ranked games yet, so they're still ranked low, but they maybe put a bunch of money into the ecosystem and they have a bigger card base than you. So you'll just run into someone who you can't beat with your deck, no matter what your skill level is. And you know, that's just, some of that comes with time. Some of it comes with experience. But the only way of communicating with another player is through an emote system. So they're all basically positive. So you can be like, oops, or, you know, well played and stuff like that. You can't really taunt people, which is kind of nice, because this is the type of game that really brings out the alpha nerd.
My +3 wood mace.
Yes, but it's real cool. It's very loosely structured compared to like other games, like, you know, other card games. You know, there's really, your turn is your turn, and you can take any action on that you like. You can cast any spell, you can make any attack in whatever order you want, and choose whatever target you want when it's your turn. So, you know, in other games, when you attack with your creatures, you attack the other player and they would assign, you know, blockers to prevent the attack. And in this, you can attack the other player, you can attack any single one of their creatures. So they lay down a gigantic creature, and you can direct half of your attack straight at that guy who he probably doesn't want you to attack, or at the player, and divide that up however. I finally unlocked the secret mechanic with some of the cards I have, which is kind of neat. You can play a card and its effect. If you want to make the joke about trap cards, Jason, now's the time.
It's face down, right? Yeah.
It's basically a card that's played face down, and
set off my trap card.
Yeah, it only becomes active when certain conditions are met. A lot of the classes have things like that.
That's pretty.
But the other big thing is that since it's based around the 9 original classes in World of Warcraft, you have a hero, and your hero has a set ability. Like, mage can cast like a fireball and do 1 damage to any target. Warrior can beef up their armor, so, you know, every point of armor they have prevents 1 damage, and they can just increase it by 2 every turn, as long as they have resources to do so. And certain characters can actually equip a weapon, which makes your hero become a creature, so you can attack. So any damage you do will go to whatever target you want, but if damage is dealt to it, it's dealt to you, so you have to be really careful about that. And the other big thing that they added to it is the arena, which is...
Yeah, you were telling me about this, and it sounded awesome.
So the arena mode is... So you basically have to buy your way into it, either through the in-game currency, or you buy a ticket. And it unlocks it's basically built-in drafting.
Yeah, so, it's their limited version, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so you buy into the arena, and you're given a choice of 3 of the 9 heroes, and you have to pick one of them, and then that will determine the base of your deck. And then you will be presented with 30 sets of 3 cards, and you can only pick one out of each 3, and you can't go back and redo a choice. So you have to build a 30-card deck, and then it unleashes you into a tournament against all the other players. And the nice thing about this is that The arena mode, you have access to the entire library of cards, even ones you don't own. So you'll be able to play with everything. You get to see a lot more of the metagame. And so you build this 30-card deck, and then you play successive games until you've lost a total of 3 times. And each time you win, you have a key. And each win you notch up upgrades your key. And when you either hit 9 wins or 3 losses, you turn in your key, and you'll get 5 chests to open. And the quality of the key determines the quality of what comes out of it, out of the chests. And sometimes you'll get extra packs of cards. You might get other special stuff, but you know,
do you get any?
You'll
hats?
Also get arcane dust, which lets you go into you can go into the entire list of cards and see what's out there, and just say, "I want to build this card because I haven't gotten it in a pack, and I haven't gotten it any other way. So this is what I really want." And so it's addictive as hell, and it is. I've said this before. This is the most fun Blizzard game I have played since the original release of WoW.
That's crazy.
I think this is more fun than StarCraft and Diablo.
That's insane.
Interesting.
It is. It feels like old Blizzard.
How does it compare to, I guess, Magic? You're a seasoned Magic player, or maybe Soulforge? Two sort of different ends of the spectrum.
So it's more like Magic, but so basically, it's kind of like if you take the turn phases out of Magic. It's like I said, your turn, like
you do it
you
all.
Can attack,
yeah.
Like you can attack before you summon, and all kinds of craziness. And that's actually the beauty of it, because you can set up like chains, because you're not restricted to phases of a turn. You can set up like a chain of abilities that would only be possible if you could sequence break in other card games, mm-hmm. which is really nice. It's definitely more like Magic. Like Soulforge is kind of its own thing, because Soulforge is primarily about lane defense and control. And this is a lot more like, there's a lot of crowd control in this, but it's very fast. Like the longest match I ever played, and it was a grinded out near stalemate, took less than 20 minutes.
That's
so
pretty cool.
You'll be busting through matches fast and furious. And they have an offline you have a practice mode if you want.
Cool.
To just play against bots.
Thanks.
I love it.
Any two-headed giant modes, anything like
honestly,
that?
Honestly, it might be my favorite game I've played this year. And that's saying a lot, so.
Now, this is where you rewind to the summer podcast where he said some other game was his favorite game this year.
Yeah. This is
but
the,
that was
by
in the
far
past,
the
and
best
I haven't played
game.
Hearthstone yet.
All right, so let's hear from Mr. Nick over there, what you've been playing.
Come on, Nico.
Let's see, what have I been playing? Not a whole lot. I picked up Pokemon Y on a whim.
Pokemanzy?
Yeah, I was browsing through the GameStops, and I picked up the box and noticed it said co-op on the back of it. So I did my duty and said, well, I'll do what I said I would never do, and I'll buy a Pokemon game. and the reason I say that is because I worked at Electronics Boutique back in the day when I was a junior and senior in high school. And Pokemon was pretty popular back then. It was just when, I think it was Red and Blue came out on the Game Boy. Yeah. And basically half of the business we did was selling Pokemon cards. And parents would basically drop their kids off in this store, and they would all crowd around the cards and buy packs and sit there. And we would basically be babysitters for them while the parents shop. So I despised
Pokemon. That sounds great.
Yeah. I despised Pokemon for most of my life and swore it off. But I picked the game up and said, all right, I'll try it. I like my 3DS XL. Doesn't get enough play time. And it's pretty interesting. I mean, it's a pretty hardcore RPG, battle RPG. It's a little more linear than I thought it would be. They kind of keep you moving forward. I mean, they literally number the areas in sequence of where you have to go, like area one. I think it's called lane.
Clearly, you have never played a Pokemon game.
No, I absolutely hate. Like I said, I swore the thing off. I hated it, and I had my reasons. But
so I hear you get roller skates real early in this one.
Yeah, like it's the first big town you hit, you get the roller skates. So yeah,
that's not something that happened early in other Pokemon games.
I think the game clock on mine has about 6 hours of playtime. I just hit the part where you have the dual battles, where you have multiple Pokemon in a battle and stuff. So the game does a pretty good job of slowly ramping you up into it. Like I said, I never played one before, and I don't feel lost at all or anything. Like, I'm missing out. And the I guess this is also the first game where the characters are actually animated. They've never been animated before.
They've always been static sprites.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the animations are pretty cool. Some of the fire effects and stuff that they do when you cast some of the spells is pretty neat. So, yeah. So basically, I just realized looking at my list, I'm playing Pokemon and I'm playing Skylanders. So I guess I've
you're
6 years old.
You're 12. Yeah, six.
Yeah. But yeah, Skylanders was kind of a surprise. They sent us a review copy. It showed up on Friday, and I was like, "All right, let me see if I can get my kid to play it with me." And we started checking it out, and I'm really glad I did because. It is a ton better than the previous Skylanders game. I don't know if you guys ever played the previous ones, but they were kind of stiff. Like, they were fun, but they were stiff because you couldn't jump. You can jump now, which is adds a lot more to it. I know it sounds really lame, but...
They got this thing, guys. It's called jumping.
Yeah.
That's the same technological leap that went from Guild Wars 1 to Guild Wars 2.
But it adds so much to the game. It just in little pieces, and the levels are designed so well. It almost feels like a Ratchet and Clank game now, especially with so many things to pick up and collect, and the platforming elements. And then you combine in the sheer number of characters the game has. I was able to use. I had I think about 8 or 9 original Skylanders, and the set comes with 3. 2 of the Swap Force ones, which is the new ones. And then one of the Series 3 guys. So the big thing with these Swap Force guys, and I can show it here on camera, is they literally just come apart.
You broke it! Now it's not worth anything!
They have magnets, so basically...
You took it out of the box, now it's not worth anything.
Yeah. Each one is an element. The top and bottom each have their own power, so when you upgrade the guys, you can upgrade the top half or the bottom half, and then you can swap in... so we got the little water guy in the bottom with this ladder ability, so he can climb stuff. And then the top half, has fire ability, and this guy has bombs and stuff like that.
That just would not mix water and fire. Yeah,
you technically have elements that are weak against each other.
Yeah.
You've played Pokemon, you know. So, water is super effective against fire.
So what's really crazy about this now, right? The big pit thing about the game is you're trying to collect all the Skylanders and stuff. With all the Swap Force characters, there are 400 possible combinations for characters. And every character you create, when I make a guy like this guy with the bomber guy top and the little octopus legs bottom, like, that's a special named character in the game, and it checks a little box off in the game. And so there's a chart of all 400 possible combinations that you can try and unlock, which is pretty crazy.
By unlock, you mean purchase.
So the Swap Force characters are more expensive than the normal $8 Skylanders. These guys, I think, are $11.99, where the regular Skylanders are $8.99, which is still cheaper than the Disney Infinity $14.99 for a character. it does gate content off, but not to the same amount that, like I said, Disney Infinity does, where, like, you can't get into whole... like story scenarios. So what happens is, like, you'll get to a section in a level, and it'll have it'll have symbols on it. It'll have, like, a fire symbol or a water symbol. Or the new one is it has dual ones. It has fire and water, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have this guy, you can go through it in single player. But if you have a fire guy and a water guy in co-op, you can still go through that door. So there's more opportunities to access the content, which is pretty nice. That's overall. Sweet. Like, it's just a fun game that they've mixed in a lot of cool little mini games. There's some racing kind of stuff. There's some, I almost want to say, like, shoot 'em up kind of mini games. And then there's, basic platforming. There's some vehicle kind of sections. There's some...
Sounds like a little bit of everything.
It does. It really does. And it does everything really well. And it's the first Skylanders game that actually... it'll be next gen. It'll be on Xbox One and PS4, and you can definitely tell that it's going to be capable for that. Like, it looks really, really good. And the story's funny. It's got, I can't think of his name right now. The guy that does the voice, he did, like, the voice of the Tick. in the Tick cartoon.
Patrick Warburton.
Yeah, Patrick Warburton. Yeah. He plays one of the main characters in it, and he puts off some pretty good lines.
So he just kind of talks down here like this.
Yeah, he plays the pilot who crashes his ship into the new island in Skylanders, and he's
my
kind of like
spinach puffs.
Yeah.
Oh, my shoulder angels.
But anyway, it's definitely... I skipped Giants was the last one, I believe, yep. And I didn't play any of that. But this one is definitely... it's a lot of fun. And I moved into my office tonight, and I was going to play it. And my wife walked in, and she's like, you're playing Skylanders in the office? Like, kind of puzzled. I was like, you're like, maybe?
Are you playing with your action figures again?
Don't judge me, Mom!
Anyway, so that's what I've been playing.
Cool. How about you, Mr. Locke?
I've been playing Blood Bowl. Yes. So, go figure. I got this weird itch to play. I think it was because the Mutant League Football Kickstarter failed. So I was like, oh,
horribly.
Man.
They are asking way too much money.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, man. So... then I just went and played the other Wizard football game I own. So, I played that, and then a little bit of GTA. I don't know how far I am. Hopefully, finish soon. I'm ready for it to be done. And then...
that is a lengthy game.
Yeah, it's so long. I've done, like, 3 or 4 heists, so... How to Survive. I don't know if you guys remember our E3 coverage from that, but I've been playing that for review. And it's embargoed, but I'll tell you what the game is that I played at E3. It's a 2-player co-op survival game, isometric view, that where you are on this island, kind of like Dead Island in a sense, but a little more remote. There's no like resort on it or hotels or any type.
No one for YouTube voodoo.
No voodoo happening there. But it's more makeshift things, like people. There's this one guy who his name's Kovac, and he gives you the rules on how to survive, and that's kind of what paces you through the game, and it gives you different
question.
Yes, answer.
Is he teaching you how to play Dark Souls?
Far from it, man. He's teaching you how to like it's broken up into a bunch of different books on this manual that you get, and you learn different skills, and the game's a lot of combining items, scavenging for stuff, and you put those together to make better things. So, review hopefully up on Wednesday. I'm going to try and pound through it in the next night or two here, and it's pretty cool. Keep an eye on it, and it's a downloadable title on Xbox Live Arcade. I'm not too sure on PSN or not.
Yeah, it's PSN and PC as well.
It's on everything, so you can pick your poison. But yeah, review Wednesday, and I will teach you how to survive, because I've been doing pretty good. I've only died once. So
for the video, if you see him right now, he looks like a man who knows how to survive.
This is what I grew when I started playing it. So. This is my survival
beard. I'm studying woodcraft right now.
Yeah.
Bushcraft.
Well, you need to, because then you can do basket weaving. So then you get a +4 basket helmet on your head.
Nice.
Yeah, I will talk about that after the review's up, because I don't want to say too much. Keep you guys waiting.
So, no surprise, I've been playing more Borderlands 2. The doing a lot of the community, the loot hunt, the Borderlands 2 loot
that's
hunt,
still,
which is
that's
probably
going
it goes on until November 9th, I think.
Jeez.
And honestly, I think it's the best thing that they've done since Tiny Tina, which I mean,
which was the last thing they did,
which was the last thing that they did. but to kind of within the context of all that is like compared to like all the DLC that they released prior to Tiny Tina, which was kind of throughout. I mean, this kind of feels like a better way to play the game. What it is that there's a daily target that drops either a legendary piece of loot or a unique piece of loot that's already available in the game. So this is like, if this is something that you've been after, it's an easier way to get this weapon. You don't have to go try and kill the one character over and over again for the hope that they drop it. This target always drops that. Once you get the gun, then there's some community goal. Kill, like, 100,000 badass racks or 20,000 anchormen who are enemies in the Captain Scarlet DLC. So, you know, you go, you kill a few of those just to help out with the community, and at the end of the week, there'll be some enemy that, again, drops another unique or legendary and also has a chance to drop then the item that is unlocked from the community goals. So it's a great way to kind of keep the game going. A lot of these things are things that people farm for that they have already invested time in or are planning to invest time in. It's a great way to allow them to just get this.
So welfare epics, I see.
Yes. they also boost the stats of a lot of these things. So, you know, they increase the magazine size or make it faster to reload or something like that to kind of make them even a little bit better. It's been a lot of fun. I've done it pretty much every single day, like during lunch, basically. That's how long it takes to go kill the target and kill a few of the other things. And that's also like farming the target a few times for different versions of the gun. So it's a cool thing to do. Their next thing is the TK Bloody Baja Harvest thing or whatever, which we'll talk about a bit, but I honestly feel like they could drop that and just keep going with this. Loot, I mean, like the real life cash prizes and stuff aside, it's one of those things that it feels like they should have done a whole lot sooner to kind of keep the game going. But it's still impressive. I mean, a year after release, they're still going with this.
I have a conspiracy theory about this loot hunt.
Yeah.
So you may recall before Borderlands 2 came out, but while Borderlands 1 was still out, they completely yanked out GameSpy and added Steamworks in and then enticed people to play multiplayer with that in preparation for their work on Borderlands 2. So, like, the last thing they do for the previous game is, like, a cornerstone of the next one in some way. So perhaps if they do another Borderlands, or maybe when they do another Borderlands, that they do a lot more like MMO community style and actually have these weekly goals built into the game.
Yeah.
And do it kind of like how
Destiny.
Well, I'm thinking more like Halo Reach had all those challenges.
Yeah.
They could actually roll this into the game UI and say, all right, fools, this week you have to go do X and it will unlock special content Y.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a cool like anniversary celebration thing, but I also think that they're kind of poking around and seeing what people might want out of the next one.
They also did this. Well, you remember too? It was they announced it with a prize pack of $100,000, and they announced it the week that the Game of the Year edition released.
Yeah.
So it was kind of entice.
It was timed for the anniversary for sure.
Definitely. Yeah, and I mean, like, it's incredible, too, what they're giving away. I think, like, each week it's like the first week was you have a chance to win 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000, 50,000. I forget how it jumps up, but every time you go and you kill the daily target, you get an entry for not only that week, but then for the grand prize or whatever. So we'll see. I just want one of those video cards that they're offering up. That'd be pretty sweet. I've also been playing Forced. We'll talk about that more. We've all kind of been playing some of that, but it's been a very interesting game, a very different kind of co-op game that I've played, and yet very much the same. Intriguing. So with all that said, let's get into some of the news. Watch Dogs has been delayed. Which
Ooh.
Watch underscore some, dogs. Say the name correctly.
Sorry, the full title. Watch underscore dogs. till spring 2014 has been delayed. I don't know. Not, depending on who you ask, not too much of a surprise that it has been within that launch window of time. Probably the more interesting thing, though, for our side is the second screen co-op, which we're seeing kind of come up more and more with different games. In this case, if you have the Watch underscore dogs app for your device underscore tablet phone whatever. You can participate in the other game. So whoever's playing on the console of choice and they get into a jam, they can have the person on the app go in and do something like, I don't know, hack into some of the traffic signals and free up a route out of town.
You know what would be amazing is if they teamed up with Introversion and the person on the tablet actually played uplink.
You're hired. You're hired, Mike.
Just like I was hoping that at least one of you would understand what
I'm with you. Yeah. I follow. Uplink is sick.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, it's, person on the tablet has to play uplink like constantly to keep you out of trouble. That would be amazing.
That'd be pretty interesting.
Has that ever been done before? That sort of cross game.
No, but a lot of games are doing it now. So yeah.
So watch out, actually, second screen players.
Yeah, we actually added a thing in our database that'll...
Like second screen sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So actually, the one thing I just realized is we have to make it searchable, but it will show up when you... if you pull up a game to look at it, it's like kind of co-op card thing. It'll mm-hmm. tell you it's a second screen co-op game. So, yeah, there's a couple of them. They're, like Madden just announced... their Xbox One game is like the person with the second screen. They're basically they act
offensive
as like
coordinator,
offensive or defensive coordinator. And it sounds lame at first, but they showed like some of the stats and the information that actually goes to the tablet, so you can kind of you can get information that's not shown on the screen just because there's not enough room to, right. to basically show all the stuff, and you can see stats on how plays worked and stuff. It's kind of cool, you know. It's different. It'd be kind of cool to sit there with your buddy and be like, you know, calling out plays.
So you're playing like crap. I'm subbing you out.
Yeah, yeah, and have your buddy yelling in your ear, play better!
Come on! That was textbook football!
Football.
I got three chops here and you can't even put all your stinks up.
I don't
know. You see, there's the mama bucket football. And the daddy bucket, and this one's the baby bucket.
Stank. Ham bone. All right. Anyways, so
the Spider 2 Y banana.
All right.
Yeah, football.
So we're just talking about the sun, but Borderlands 2, the DLC for that, the latest one, the Headhunter series, TK Baja's Bloody Harvest drops tomorrow for $3. Rather than go hunting for loot, although I guess there will be some maybe new stuff, but you're hunting for heads, and so you go kill bosses and get their heads to claim as a prize and put on your guy, which really confuses me, but
yeah,
right on. I mean, yeah, they're working it with the community stuff right now, so.
I'm telling you, next Borderlands, they should just give you armor. Instead of just the head skins.
The skins.
Oh, yeah,
just go, just make it... Just
make it Diablo.
Armor.
Just make it Diablo. Yeah.
Jeez, you're so close. Just take that extra step.
Just rename your shields. Just call them... Yeah.
I want to have, like, the fisting gauntlets of fury or some absurdly juvenile...
I already thought I bought those for your birthday, Mike. Yeah.
Oh, my birthday's not for a few months.
Oh, spoilers.
Damn.
Oops. Guess what you're getting in the mail.
The Spider 2 Y banana.
No. You're going to get a fisting gauntlet of fury in your butthole.
All right, all right.
Oh.
Speaking of DLC, two other DLC things real quick. Payday 2 Loot Bag DLC.
That reminds me, I need to buy that soundtrack.
Woo-woo! Yeah.
You been into this at all, Locke?
Yeah, they Payday had their birthday, and with that came a bunch of stuff. I got it right here, actually. They they have a contest. They just want some cool stories of your heists, and they put those into a pool, and then they're going to draw some names, and you'll get a poster, a sick shirt, and... I think there's the poster is signed, which is really cool too. And then you also they're also giving away copies of the game.
I got a cool co-op story.
Do you want to tell that now or after?
One time I tried playing Payday 2 with only one other player, and it was impossible to win.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I've got the exact same story.
That's why you get your second screen, and you'd be like, hey, I needed help with this heist. And then the person comes into your game, and then they help you win.
Hey, hold on. You put zip ties on that guy. I gotta answer this text.
Some dick.
Very unprofessional. Yeah.
Some
very
guy's texting me in the middle of a heist. What the hell?
He pulls the mask up. It's like, just can't read
just through this. It's all foggy in here. soundtrack, like Nick said, it's got a killer soundtrack that you can get that for $5. If you if you join the Payday 2 Steam group, you get a wicked bear mask called the Mark, and it's awesome. It's got one eye, it's got one eye, and then the other eye is like clawed through. It looks really cool, and I will be using that permanently from now on. And then, yeah, they've got a demo out, so people that, for whatever reason, you don't own Payday 2, you can try the demo. It gives you, I think, the bank heist level, as well as, I think, up to level 10 of experience, which is next to nothing, but you get a feel. You should know. Just buy Payday, people. Just get it. Seriously.
I think I know what we should stream next week.
Yeah.
There we go. I like it.
That works.
And then the last thing, they have an offshore Payday thing that they're doing. They tested it out, and I think the last day is Thursday, which it's a new thing added to CrimeNet, and basically you can gamble away your hard-earned cash for money or items. So high risk, high reward, baby.
There you go.
Anyways, yeah, it's cool. Payday's so freaking good.
Nice.
And
The other piece of DLC that we got dropping is the Saints Row 4 DLC, Enter the Dominatrix. It shows up tomorrow.
You know, rather the DLC than the that originally was Saints Row 4.
Wait a minute.
Hold on now.
Yo, dog, I heard you like... I heard you like dildos.
Yo, dog. I heard you
yo.
Like...
Dope.
Yo.
Yo.
Shadow dope. Warrior.
Yeah. So anyways, rather than the Zen invasion and the aliens, it's taken over by leather bondage and gimps and lots of lettuce money penny. Leather fetish. Anyways, go check that out if you're a fan of Saints Row 4. Looks even more ridiculous than the game already is, and that's saying something. What we got next? Mr. Locke Vincent.
What?
I was wondering if you could tell us how you died.
Well, I fell down a pit. I got an arrow to the knee. I got sliced.
Really? Did you seriously take an arrow to the knee?
Yeah, no joke. No. You can look at the damn thing.
I used to play Dark Souls 2. I got an arrow in the knee.
Oh, I used to be an adventurer like you.
I got sliced by a chariot. That had
a ghost
wheels,
chariot.
Ghost chariot, yeah. And other than that, that was it. I actually only died like 4 times in Dark Souls 2 when I played the beta last Saturday. And it was more Dark Souls, which is a good thing. I find describing Dark Souls is difficult to do. It's an action RPG, and this time around, they have changed some little things that will only make a difference if you played the first game. The second game in the series, but Dark Souls 1. They changed... you can heal yourself with stuff other than Estus flasks, which I think is the biggest thing for new players. They have
and you can also move while healing.
You can also move while healing, so while you're guzzling down an Estus flask, you can run away instead of taking hits to the face. but these gems will drop randomly, and I found they dropped off the bigger enemies, but you use them, they're called life gems, and they will heal over time. So if you're in an area and you're exploring, you just use a life gem, that'll bring you back up. So you're not entering sort of a fresh new area with no life, because you don't know what's coming up and you want to be prepared, that sort of thing. And maybe you're out of Estus flasks. I don't know. But Estus flasks heal you instantly, whereas the life gems take, you know, 30 seconds to fill up your life bar. But yeah, I played the beta for about 2 hours, the full streams on the site, and it feels really good. Like, I don't know what part of the game I started in. It was kind of this haunted keep, and it had a mix of ghouls and thieves and bandits.
Eventually, spooky?
It was very spooky, and it was very dark. And that brings me to my next point, in that they have the torch mechanic, which I don't know if you guys saw, but we when we played at E3, I played with Andrew, and the torch would come out. And you lose your shield. So now you have, now you're dual wielding torch, sword, and then you're like, oh, what am I gonna block stuff with? And then you just take hits. So while you're this comes into play, and I noted that it's really interesting because it adds this element of having this torch scout in your co-op group. So basically, one person is going to be carrying this torch, because you go into a cave first. Literally, the first cave I walked into, couldn't see the floor, and I'm just like, what? and then there's like different areas like riddled throughout the level I was in, and yeah, you needed a torch, otherwise you were just guessing. And there was a point where
you're likely to be eaten by a group.
So did they also take away the native light radius that your character puts off? Because in Dark Souls, you could kind of get by.
As far as I could tell,
that
you couldn't, like, when you looked at your feet, you couldn't see anything. So, and that's how I fell off the ledge. Like, I was just like walking around and I was like,
just, like the entire game is the Tomb of the Giants. So
no, that's the first thing I said. I was like, oh man, Tomb of the Giants is level one. I am so screwed. So, and
Tomb of the Giants is awesome though.
But yeah, the game feels great. It feels like Dark Souls. They haven't changed a ton with the combat or anything like that. Just little things here and there. In that first area, like I said, I don't know what stage of the game it was. I'm assuming towards the beginning, but it was really cool because there was about four or five branching paths that you could go on, which I love. I love exploring. I love not knowing where to go. Eventually, after I played for 2 hours, I knew the route to the boss, and then you could just, like, summon a guy, get another guy, run up, kill the guardian in front of the boss, go into the boss, and then that's how you practice. So, and I found, I don't know if it was because I've put, like, 200 hours into Dark Souls 1, but I often would get to a part, and, like, we'd be rolling, doing awesome with a group of three, and then Buddy would just, like, do something stupid and not play safe. He wasn't playing by the rules. He was not playing by the rules, and is like, flur, 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 you know, smoke blunts 420 has just died, and then it sends you back.
That
so
pretty much sounds like co-op Dark Souls.
But
so you got your guy, he runs Leroy Jenkins straight into the gaping dragon, and you're like, okay.
Like, what are you doing, Penis Lord XXX? Like, so come on.
The biggest thing I noticed about Dark Souls 2 at E3 was the removal of invincibility during a backstab.
Mm-hmm.
So if you backstab an enemy, you can still get your ass handed to you, whereas in the first Dark Souls, when you backstabbed an enemy, you would be invincible.
Yeah, and so, and I didn't.
You can also miss backstabs.
Yes, you can miss them.
You can also miss a parry,
which is interesting.
Like, you parry, but then miss the follow up. It's real weird.
Yeah, it's not an automatic sort of like critical hit. But the backstabs are actually, I'm going really deep into freaking Dark Souls crap. But the backstabs were really cool because it changed for what weapon you had. So if you had this big greatsword, you'd like chop him in the back of the leg. He'd kneel down, and then you just like take out his head. It was cool. It felt good. It feels good, guys.
The other thing that they did that I really appreciated was they actually added a system for stairwell combat. So, you know, one of the big things in Dark Souls was if you could get a drop from a ledge onto an enemy, you do double damage.
Yeah.
And you could kind of game some of the stairwells in that game that way.
Yeah, you could
keep
going up.
But in Dark Souls 2, you can actually knock dudes down on the stairs and then jump onto them and get bonus damage. And it was, I really need that game to come out.
I didn't actually manage to do... I forgot about that stair stuff. I didn't manage to do that, like, kick them down the stairs and jump on them. But I was playing pretty conservatively, and that's why I didn't die too much. But I did manage to finish the first boss, I guess, well, the boss that I found there. And that was the one they showed in the pictures that we have, the concept art. It's the Executioner on the Chariot, so... Mm-hmm. Very interesting boss too. It's a very interesting boss for that.
How did the you get any good PvP stories out of the beta?
Yeah, and I didn't. I fought like probably half a dozen guys, and they're all lopsided battles. Like I was with another person, and we just 2-on-1'd them, which was fine. Like I don't feel bad doing that when you're just kind of starting out. But I wanted to see about in more than one invader, but I never had a chance to do that. But because I remember you and I, Mike, were talking about having multiple invaders at different times, and no sort of one place was safe or sacred. So I would like to get in another beta session just to sort of confirm that, because I want to see what that's like, because that's a huge aspect of it, is the invasions. If invasions can happen at any time, that's nuts. And you're going to want to be in a party at all times. Otherwise, it's like someone's going to run amok in your game. And I love that. That's one of my favorite parts about the game, is like you start sweating and your heart's beating when you see that thing. So-and-so has invaded your world. And you're like, yes, let's do this. So.
Man, there were a few times when I was playing through with Andrew when we'd get invaded. And Andrew is a great Dark Souls player, but he sucks at PvP.
It's so awesome.
So there were a few times when he'd just go up there and he'd get absolutely worked by somebody. He's like, all right, you know, just let me know when you died. And like 15 minutes later, I'm still fighting the guy. And we're having like this big back and forth battle. Dun, 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 he's like, where are you? Dun, dun, I said, I'm still fighting that guy. And, oh man. And were you there for nobody escapes the Mountain of Doom or whatever?
No, I wasn't.
Oh man, that was...
So good.
I need Dark Souls 2.
Anyways, it's looking good. It's feeling good. Again, they were testing the network on this part, and it seemed to be working. Like, I had no problem summoning friends. I had no problem getting summoned, and no problem invading. So, yeah, good work. Keep it up, guys.
Things to look forward to in the spring.
Yep.
All right. So, with all that said, brings us to our feature discussion for this week. We all played a little bit of a game coming out on Thursday called Forced, all in caps letter.
I want that.
Get them out of your system now.
We were talking about Saints Row 4. I wanted that to be the next DLC for Saints Row 4. So, anyways.
Enter the Dominatrix followed by Forced.
Yeah. Anyways, continue, please.
So,
independent games.
What it is a co-op arena brawler. You have different weapons. There's a bow, Captain America shield, ice shield, really, claws, and a big fire hammer. And you can choose one of these different weapon types, and you have different abilities. And then you go into an arena where you fight off foes, but in addition to fighting off foes, there's usually a puzzle element involved that entails the use of what's known as your spirit mentor, who you can summon back and forth between the different players, and if he passes through shrines and certain things, and, you know, he destroys stuff or he activates certain shrines, and that lets you move about your merry way. Even despite seeing all the gameplay footage and stuff from it, leading up to this, still not what I was expecting from the game when I actually got in and played it. I don't know, what was your guys' kind of first impressions going in?
I'm trying to compare it to anything else, because the soul buddy mechanic, the little orb that you're passing around, it feels like they tried to merge just kill arenas with soccer.
What?
You're like, why soccer? Dude, get in position so I can pass you
right.
The puck.
Okay, I got it.
Pass you the ball. And so there's like a lot of the levels are laid out so that you'll have to pass this thing in geometric shapes to be kind of effective with it, or efficient with it, I should say. So you'll need to position someone so you can pass it from, you know, top to the middle to the right and form like an L shape, or, you know, top bottom right top. So you can scatter it around, and every player would need to be in position, but at the same time you're all fighting enemies. And I felt that was really unique, and it was super stressful because there were also a significant latency issue that would make some of the at least for a while when we were playing, that the soul puck or whatever the heck, I don't remember what it was called, but
it was just
kind
of like
you'd let it go and it would just kind of jitter around uncontrollably. So you'd react and say, "Well, I need to get it. Let's try it again." And then by that time, the game catches up and it zips over from like the one side of the screen it was on, and everyone gets frustrated with each other. But I thought that was really neat, and I also like the how the combat, you have to spread your damage around. So like you can focus fire on enemies and take them out, but you'll oftentimes get swarmed, and every time you strike an enemy, it puts a tick mark over them, and when there's four or five tick marks, they take the maximum amount of damage from abilities. So there's 10 guys swarming at you. If you all try and spread 5 tick marks on everybody, someone can lob a single ability in and take it all out. Or you could be really inefficient and try and focus fire, one enemy, and everyone starts lobbing their abilities in, and you blew a bunch of cooldowns and you're not prepared for the next wave. So it's a lot more co-op than a lot of games like this end up being, because you actually have to communicate, or you will fail.
Yeah, and I think, like, if you watch our stream from the start of it, where it was just, I'd say the three of us, Nick, Mike, and myself, there is a little bit of communication, but not too much of just, oh, I'm going to grab it, I'm going to go over here, I'm going to, and then it was just fighting guys. And then by the time we got to the boss, the first boss, and started playing against that, and then Locke, when you joined in, it was like, okay, communicate throughout. Like, I'm doing this, I'm grabbing this, I'm taking the ball now, I'm moving over here, okay, I'm positioning for this next one, and watch out for that. I mean, like, it was amazing to see that jump in our communication level, and then how much better we actually did get the second time around.
Yeah.
I thought
also that survival mode is really hard.
Oh, it's hard. It is, so yeah. Hard.
I'll talk about that in a second.
I think that would get better as your character level progressed a bit more, because I know we were using some pretty low-level characters, but I really like the... because it was an arena battler, had a very arcadey feel to it, but you could do some interesting customization, not only with each of the different weapons having different attributes and different abilities. As you skilled up your player, you could change what your abilities did, because you could only, have, like, 2 or 3 abilities equipped, I think.
So you have, like, a main attack.
Yeah.
You then get a secondary that uses the marks.
Yeah.
And then you get a passive for, like,
right.
The first 3 that you get. And then you start unlocking more slots for another cooldown, trigger ability, and then another passive. But those come, like, with a lot of time. And those get unlocked by... when you complete levels, you get a crystal for completing the level, and there's usually a challenge and a timer. And if you beat both of those, then
you get
the
2 crystals. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought that was cool.
But you said about the leveling thing, when I went back in and checked, leveling only gets you more abilities. It doesn't do anything to change your damage,
right,
like from your base attacks, which I thought is an interesting way to do it as well, because you're pretty much relying upon what combos you're setting your character up for.
Yeah.
And then to work with all your other teammates.
I think something that we... Well, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
I think something that we actually missed out on, it was exploring if the abilities between players actually synergize.
Yeah.
I feel like that would probably be the next step beyond what we did. Because everyone just kind of, you pick your character and then you pick a build and you jump into a level. But the synergy, the abilities clearly have to tie closely to what other characters are doing. So, I'm sure someone had a crowd control ability, and then I had the character I was using had an enormous area of effect attack. So if we could bunch everybody up, and then I could clear it out by, using my AoE bomb.
And some people have, like, I think, Nick, did you have heals?
Yeah, that was, like, the later ability I unlocked.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I thought it was neat. I want to explore a bit more.
Yeah, we kind of joked around about characters.
You shouldn't do
acting like Marvel characters or whatever. Like, I played with the gamepad, and it really felt like Marvel Ultimate Alliance, like, the combat. Like, I don't know if you guys ever played that.
That's a very good call.
But, the character I was had the claws, so, you know, we said, oh, this is Wolverine. But, I mean, that's kind of how the combat felt, is that kind of fast-paced action RPG.
Yeah, so I'd say either Ultimate Alliance or, like, Gauntlet Dark Legacy or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, no, I thought it was pretty fun, and like, I had played it a little bit single player before we played co-op, and it wasn't very apparent just how co-op the game would be until you got to some of the later stuff, and you had to kind of, you know, steer that orb around, and then especially like in the survival stuff, we started coming up with strategies on like where to position ourselves in the arena so that we could pass this stuff, through some of the things. Like, there was the one totem that basically knocked down all the enemies, you know, so we wanted to always have someone near that so that you could pass it to them and kind of buy us some time. And then there was obviously the healing totem and stuff like that. So there's definitely some serious depth to the game, where it's one of those games where on its surface it seems pretty simple, but as you start peeling back the layers, you're like, okay, this has got a lot going on here.
Yeah.
And as I went forward, like, I kind of progressed a little bit past where we did in the campaign mode, it's interesting to see the way the levels are set up for anyone, any number of players to kind of work with. So, you know, there's challenges in there that, as a single player, you can complete. You have to sometimes take a slightly different path, or it takes a bit more time for you to do, versus if you had a group and you could easily just, okay, you know, four guys get like almost in a diamond shape and pass here, you know, and it quickly gets you to where you need to be for the different shrines and stuff that you have to activate. Campaign also kind of an interesting setup for the survival mode, which is one of the tougher survival modes I think I've played in the game in a while. We lasted, what was the longest, like two minutes.
It reminds me of Left 4 Dead 2 survival mode, where it's just it ramps up really quick, and if you get quote unquote behind, you're done.
Yeah,
like there's no catching up.
Yeah,
and I thought it was interesting and kind of cruel that they have that timer there of you will die in 10 seconds. Like,
yeah,
sorry, your team is just done for. Like, we can already predict, like, you're out. So it's a really tough survival mode, which I think is good, and obviously having more abilities unlocked for your character gives you more, you know, choices for things to do, but since your damage is always the same, it really does come down to how well you can synergize as a team to work. So, very interesting game. It comes out on Thursday. Our review will be up then as well when the game comes out, and you can hear more about it there. I think that does it for us for this week, and anything else that you guys want to add real quick?
One thing I did come out today we didn't mention in the news was Monaco got new mini campaign. It's origin stories for the characters, as well as a zombie mode. You can replay any of the levels with zombies in it. I haven't seen much on it or played it, but I do know it's out, and I believe it's free.
It's got the prologue stuff's got eight or nine new levels, which is quite a bit. and then the zombie mode sounds pretty fun, so go play more Monaco. It's also on sale for this week, so buy it. $6.
Very cool.
PC Master Race.
Extra life.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. We didn't mention it last time, but this time definitely, Co-Optimus is doing, once again, led by Eric Murphy, our community manager, a Extra Life campaign for helping out donations to the children's hospitals and donation and all that kind of good stuff. It's the weekend of November 2nd, so we got six people on the team: Eric, Chris, Mark from the site, a few other of our Co-Optimus community members there joining in as well. There's a homepage set up, which is co-optimus.com/extralife-2013. You can go check it out. Donate some money. Don't have a huge goal. We're just going for $2,500 this year. We're at 513 now, it looks like, with funding, so making pretty good headway. And then, obviously, on the day of the event, you can check out the streams from Eric, Chris, and Mark. And donate kind of as they play. So be sure to check that out and tune in. They'll all have some fun times playing co-op games for 24 hours. The best time to check it out usually is around 2 a.m., 4 a.m. They're all delirious.
That's 24 hours of Dark Souls.
Oh.
I think Nick should have to do that.
I'll do it.
That'll be the goal. That'll be the goal next year. How about that?
If we raise
24 hours of Dark Souls 2.
We should just
I'll
have like
$1,000 if Nick plays Dark Souls to completion in 24 hours.
We get to 5. If we get to 5 grand, Nick will play through Dark Souls for 24 hours.
3 hours into the stream, you just see like controllers breaking in half and like disheveled mess of a man.
If you get to 10 grand, Mike will host a Skylanders swap force party with 4-year-olds at his house. And if you raise $20,000, Jason will enter the Dominatrix. So, those are the types of things that you gotta get to get people.
$50,000, we'll see Locke form a Moose Polo League.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the Co-Optimus Extra Life Kickstarter.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, we'll do that next year. We'll figure out what we're gonna do. But this year, check it out. Should be fun. Should be a good cause. iOS apps, Windows Phone 7, Android apps, but of course the site just looks beautiful and gorgeous on its own in the mobile side, so you can check it out there as well. The entire
did you just
store is
smack the jukebox or what?
Yes, I did. The entire store is now on sale for just $10. I don't know, just go buy our store for $10.
We're falling apart here.
That sure is a typo. That is a typo right there.
I'm still laughing at the Fonzie reference.
Well, guys.
Oh, we just broke down at the end. All right, so leave feedback for us on iTunes, of course. Follow us on Twitter. We are at CoOptimus without the dash. And, of course, as always, if you call into that special secret number, 646-926-6748, 646-926-6748, you will leave us a voicemail. We'll answer your questions. But you'll also get Locke's super secret special cheat code hotline, where he will reveal tips so juicy, such as...
No, I want to hear about the sweet, juicy tips some more. I can't actually provide you with a free cheat code because I require $1.99 a minute for me to dig them out of that box I put them into. So
he's a consultant now.
Okay, here we go. If you play the Super Nintendo version of Street Fighter II, the original, if on the first player's controller when the Capcom logo displays and you press down R up L Y B in sequence, you can also choose mirror matches in versus mode.
That's pretty good.
There you go.
Deep.
I have that memorized still. I don't know why.
I don't know why either. So to find the answer to that, tune in next time for the next exciting episode of Co-Opticat. For Nick, Locke, Mike, thank you all for tuning in. Have a great week.
All right. Ended.